topic today is emptiness. And as I said in the handout, there's really nothing to say about it. And that's why it's a major topic, and there's been a huge amount of ink spilled over that matter. What I said was the actual realization of emptiness, nothing can be said about it. Conceptualizations about emptiness fill many volumes of Mahayana Buddhist writing. There are, however, two basic approaches, the direct and the indirect. Going to backtrack a little bit. Emptiness is one of the main topics of the Mahayana, innovation that developed about 500 years after the Buddha's original teaching. And the notion of emptiness was present in seed form in the original teachings, but it was not explicit. The emptiness that was emphasized was the emptiness of any real self. The self doesn't exist as a permanent entity, even though we think of ourselves as permanent. And if you look back over your life, you find that you've changed innumerable times and not the same person even as you were 20 years ago. Since the self is that impermanent and fluctuates, they replaced it for spiritual reasons with the five skandhas. And they say there's no real personal ego. What there is a process of five skandhas. And these five skandhas rise and fall every moment. And they're basically exterior form or appearance, perception, feeling, then there's the store of karmic seeds and impulses that's mostly in the subconscious. And then there's the thinking mind, the dualistic mind. Those are the five skandhas. And what's said is that's a process, rising and falling. The dharmas that make up the skandhas, there's 100 or so of them, and they're divided into wholesome, unwholesome, and neutral dharmas. And they're, I think of them as atoms of experience. They're instantaneously arising experiences, which when they combine make a molecule of experience, if you will. So these dharmas rise and fall according to the moments rising and falling, and nothing lasts forever, to say the least. Now that was the first turning of the wheel of the Dharma, which comprised mostly the four holy truths: suffering, the cause of suffering, cessation of suffering, and the path to the cessation of suffering. And then the laws of karmic cause and effect, which were summarized in the 12 links of dependent arising. Those were the core teachings of the first turning. Then the second turning came along. They had to update because the times had changed. And they were running out of steam a little bit, so they innovated and devised the Mahayana. And one of the main emphasis in the Mahayana is the concept and realization of emptiness. Also the six perfections, the bodhicitta, the vow to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, was an innovation of the Mahayana. Again, all these forms were present in the original teachings in seed form. They just got developed in the second turning, which gave us the Madhyamaka and the Prajnaparamita Sutras, which are the conceptualizations pointing to emptiness. Then in the third turning, the mind-only school arose, and the deep examination of mind and how it works, and the principle of the Buddha nature was added in. And then they assimilated the concept of emptiness and changed it slightly during the third turning. So we're looking at the second turning. And as I said, there's a direct approach to emptiness and an indirect approach. indirectly, there's a word in Sanskrit, shunyata, which is usually glossed as emptiness. It can also mean puffed up, like the foam on an ocean wave, say. There, you know, it's there in a sense, but there's nothing really there, it's just foam. Or a rainbow in the sky, it appears, but there's nothing really there. Now, oddly enough, shunya is also the term used in India for the number zero. So if you think of a number line, one, it exists, minus one, it don't exist, then where's the middle ground? That's the zero. It's like the null set in set theory. It's always there, but it's not noticeable usually. You know, in arithmetic, if you add zero to anything, you get the same thing. And if you multiply by zero, then you get nothing. So zero absorbs all numbers. It leaves all numbers the same, and then it absorbs all numbers as well. And that's a pretty good metaphor for how emptiness operates in our experience. Now, the other indirect approach to emptiness also comes from the third turning, and it's best exemplified in the notion of the five paths, the five paths which lead from ordinary life to enlightenment. And of these five paths, we're mostly on the path of accumulation, the first path. And that's when we do practices of various sorts and meditations in order to accumulate merit and wisdom. Merit is accumulated from a spiritual religious act or from a virtuous act. And wisdom is what we're trying to accumulate by considering the doctrine of emptiness. So then the second path of the five paths is called the path of the yoga or the path of linking. And that's when the practice gets really intense. And it's made up of four parts. The first part is called heat. The second part is called summits. The third is called patience. And the fourth is called supreme mundane dharmas. That's the top of samsara. You can't get any higher in samsara than the fourth of those. They're called aids to penetration. Because the idea is you got a basis in the path of accumulation, where you've practiced enough to gather sufficient merit and wisdom to proceed to the intense level of practice. Once you're at the intense level of practice, then you actually generate a warmth. In Hindu, they call that tapas, the heat of yoga. And I'm pretty sure it's the same metaphor there. The other metaphor is the dharma that shines through on the third path, the path of seeing, is like the sun. And at the beginning of the yogic path, you can feel the warmth of the sun, and then it increases. Another metaphor, you go from the heat of the intense practice to summits, some kind of peak or crest of practice. And then you have to start again generating the heat, doing the intense practice. And then again you get to a peak. And then again you start and generate the yogic heat again. And that accumulates gradually. And that's why they call the third step patience, because you have to patiently repeat that step of raising the intensity of the consciousness from by doing these intense practices. Meditating hard, you know, getting into samadhi states and contemplating and meditating on the principles of wisdom. And then finally you get to the top of the world, the supreme mundane dharmas. And it's from there that you make another leap, and the leap goes to the path of seeing, as it's called, the darshana marga. And in the darshana marga, the sunlight of the dharma is in its full manifestation. And you see the entire path before you at the third part of the path. And then you know exactly what you have to do. You know, but we're kind of going by estimation and approximation when we're on the path of accumulation. We know these are valuable practices to do, but we don't quite know what we're doing. And then when the practice gets intense, we're going in a direction. We're drawn to that son of the Dharma, but at first it seems distant. And then at the path of seeing, there's a cognizance of the total deep meaning of the four truths, and the vision of the Dharma in its completeness, exactly what it is. And then, having had the vision of the path, then on the fourth path, you proceed to practice what you've had a vision of. And again, you know what you have to do, but you still have to go and do it. And that can be a very long path. The nine of the Bodhisattva stages happen during the Bhavana Marga, the path of meditation, the path of cultivation. And then the fifth path is called no more learning, and that's basically the awakening of Bodhi. So what they did then is to take those five paths and all the principles of them and wrote a very structured work from Maitreya Buddha called the Abhisamyalankara. And this Abhisamyalankara puts the entire structure of the large Perfect Wisdom Sutras, the 25,000 line, into an outline form. So they comment or give subheadings for each of the parts of the major Wisdom Sutras. And then that was a little bit much, so then at a later phase of the writing of the Wisdom Sutras, they began to condense. And the Heart Sutra is the ultimate, well, the penultimate condensation of the teachings of the Wisdom Sutras. And you can gauge your progress by contemplating the words of the Heart Sutra. How much you understand will increase over time. But it's got a complete teaching in it. And then the ultimate teaching of the Wisdom Sutras is the perfection of wisdom in one letter. And it goes, receive, O Ananda, for the benefit of all beings, the perfection of wisdom in one letter. Ah. And that has all kinds of implications. Ah is the first letter of the alphabet, and all words are made up of letters. So all the words and concepts come from that one ah. It emanates those words and concepts. And the other thing is it appears on an empty page, so that it's a figure and ground kind of thing. The empty page, as it were, emanates the ah. And the ah emanates all letters, and they create words, and those create concepts. And then the principle of emptiness is to look beyond the concepts to the reality, to the what's called in Vajrayana the luminous emptiness. So that's the goal, to arrive at a realization of emptiness. But all we can do is continue to review concepts that point in the direction of emptiness. So there's the indirect path to emptiness. The direct path is the sutras themselves. The Wisdom Sutras, there are about 40 of them of various sizes. Heart Sutra, Diamond Sutra, 8,000 line sutra, the Ashta, and the 25,000 line sutra, the Panchavimshati, are the main ones. And then the 100,000 line sutra is just an expansion of the 25,000. They have all kinds of short forms. They'll say, like in the Heart Sutra here, we had, there is no ignorance and no extinction of ignorance up to no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. If you unpack that, you've got 12 items. You know, it starts with ignorance and leads to samskaras, which is karmic impulses. which leads to consciousness, and so on, up to birth, old age, decay, and death. And then the extinction of all those, if you can wipe out ignorance, then you can wipe out samsara through wiping out ignorance and the samskaras. So the 100,000 line then is an extension of the 25,000 line by filling in some of those lists. You know, you may have 81 items and they'll mention the first one and the last one. And you have to puzzle over what's there that's unspoken. And the Heart Sutra is the same way. It's extremely condensed and contains all the essentials, again, in a kind of seed form. Now, the direct approach also includes the Madhyamaka, Nagarjuna's philosophical work. And they arrive at emptiness through logical deconstruction of everything. So they use logic to destroy logic, to defeat logic. And the result is that emptiness arises in the mind conceptually at first. The concepts get subtler and subtler, and anybody that's looked into the high philosophy of the Madhyamaka is amazed at the subtlety and complexity of that conceptualization of emptiness. But the concepts get subtler and subtler until finally there's almost nothing there. And then it's easier to make the leap into emptiness. At least that's what the scholars claim. The yogis would say you have to just keep meditating. You know, live in a cave, reduce all distractions to zero, and focus on the Dharma until the realization of emptiness arises. That's the other way to do it. So those are direct approaches. And as I wrote, I hope this is right, as the concepts get subtler, they get increasingly more paradoxical. Like the Perfect Wisdom Sutras are based on paradox and intentional illogic and leaps of logic. So they're very exuberant. I find them more entertaining than the logical approach. But then that's a matter of personal temperament, right? There's some people that are way into the logical approach. Anyway, I quoted a koan from the Zen tradition. How do you get a goose out of the bottle? And the Roshi replies, it's out. The point being, the goose was never in the bottle in the first place. And, you know, neither is our life experience in the kind of container that we put it in through our delusions and our attachments and our anger. So if we could dissolve our delusions, attachments, and anger, then the goose would be out of the bottle. But it was never in it in the first place because it's all empty. That's that principle.
There's no goose, right?
There's no goose and no bottle, yes, exactly. Now to get back to the scholastic part. This is going to be a bit of a mental exercise. On the next page, I list 20 kinds of emptiness. And then note, of course, there is only one emptiness. But these 20 kinds are arrived at because people have different perspectives on emptiness, different ways of approaching emptiness. And they hang up at different points thinking this or that or the other thing is real. So they go through this list of 20 then to try to cover emptiness from all angles. And you can gauge whether anything stuck tomorrow if you look through the list and see if any of them still make sense. But I'll go through them regardless. Interior emptiness, exterior emptiness, interior and exterior emptiness, emptiness of emptiness, great emptiness, emptiness of ultimate reality, conditioned emptiness, unconditioned emptiness, infinite emptiness, emptiness without beginning or end, emptiness of non-repudiation, emptiness of essential nature, emptiness of all dharmas, emptiness of own marks, basic characteristics, unascertainable emptiness, emptiness of the non-existence of own being, emptiness of non-existence, emptiness of own being, emptiness of existence, emptiness of other being. Now, frankly, I don't understand all of these either, but we'll start from the beginning and see if we can pick some of these apart. Now, interior emptiness is basically our entire inside experience. You know, our feelings, our thoughts, our perceptions, and all of that is empty of any essential nature. It comes and goes, there's nothing permanent in it. It's like cotton candy in a way. And exterior emptiness is that the objects of the senses are in fact empty of any essential nature. And if you think about your sensory perception, I just saw a raindrop, now I saw a leaf. It goes from one thing to another, it's not constant. You know, it's totally our perception of the external world, the sights and sounds and so on of the world is completely empty of any constancy, any essential nature. And then interior and exterior emptiness together, the inside and the outside, that too is an arbitrary distinction. So it's all empty of any essential nature. Emptiness of emptiness, they say that you know, most sentient beings are caught up in their attachments. And depending on how heavy the attachment is, how heavy the confusion is, it takes more or less effort to open that up into a realization. But the really hopeless cases are the ones that are attached to emptiness itself. Because the emptiness is, after all, just another concept. And to get attached to it is a fairly major mistake. It's one of those you can't get there from here kind of puzzles. So emptiness is empty of its own self, as well as everything being empty of itself. Emptiness of ultimate reality. Great emptiness first. That's, again, everything. The physical world, from the quarks to the atoms, to the stars and galaxies, it's all great emptiness. Now, ultimate reality, paramartha shunyata. This is related to the famous two truths, which is, again, one of the innovations of the Mahayana that has seeds in the original teaching. The conventional reality or relative reality is what we live in, it's consensus reality. You know, and this reality has a certain value. You know, we couldn't function without it. You know, we grease the social wheels through basic consideration of others. And then there are other factors in the relative reality. The collective dream or nightmare that's going on is a part of relative reality. And our personal psychological makeup is part of relative reality as well. And so this is the reality we live in 99% of the time. But the teaching is there's another reality which is called ultimate reality. And this ultimate reality is exactly the emptiness of everything. And from the point of view of ultimate reality, everything's the same. You know, there's no difference between one thing and another. So this sixth item on the list of 20 emptinesses has to do with the fact that even ultimate reality, luminous emptiness itself, is empty of any essential nature. Then conditioned emptiness, that word samskrita shunyata. Samskrita is the same word for the Sanskrit language, and it means put together, complicated, elaborated, conditioned. So everything that we're familiar with is conditioned. The only unconditioned dharmas that stay the same are empty space and nirvana. Everything else is conditioned. And it's similar to relative reality then. And unconditioned emptiness, again, empty space is empty of any characteristic at all. Nirvana is empty of characteristics. You know, it can't be got at. Infinite emptiness, well, it goes on forever. And emptiness without beginning or end, that dissolves the concept of a creation and a creator, or of the rising and falling of a moment. All of that doesn't begin, doesn't end. You know, one karmic cause after another creates one result after another. That result becomes a cause of a future result, and so on. And it never had a beginning, and it won't ever end. So we transcend it through realizing emptiness. The emptiness of non-repudiation, I couldn't find anything about that. Anavakara, it wasn't in the dictionary. So, you can reason about it a little bit. Non-repudiation is obviously where you don't deconstruct a given idea. Say the concept that mind is all there is. You know, you could repudiate that and say, no, emptiness is all there is. But if you don't repudiate that, that whole process is still empty. And it's still a matter of relative reality. That's as close as I can get. Emptiness of essential nature, prakriti shunyata. Now, that's Kanzi's rendering. I don't think it's very illuminating at this point. A prakriti is a Hindu term for the material world, the matter. In the Hindu Samkhya, which is very similar to the Abhidharma, in the Samkhya, prakriti is the principle of matter. And purusha is the principle of personhood or spirit. Now, obviously, we don't buy into the personhood part.